Our next speaker will be Patrick Mittling, and Patrick is the sound archivist at the Belfer Audio Archive, which is part of the Special Collections Research Center at the Syracuse University Libraries. His background in audio preservation began at the University of Chicago, where he earned his master's in linguistics. There, he spent several years working as a graduate research assistant at the Digital Media Archive, describing, preserving, and digitizing linguistic field recordings from the 1930s through the 1980s. Please welcome Patrick.
For the audio, just plug in. Okay. I want to echo the sentiments of William and say thank you for being so welcoming to us youngins and the people new to this field. So where did we go there? Okay. Oh, I also wanted to make an announcement. William mentioned that Jenny Doctor was scheduling a lunch. If you take your buffet ticket to the third floor, we will gather there and then decide if there's enough of us to get a room on the second floor or if we're going to stay up on the third floor. So that's the plan for following this. Okay, so the Stream Team is my little baby from these years. So let's start with a little bit of background about Belfer. The Belfer Audio Archive at Syracuse University was once on the cutting edge of the re-recording and preservation of audio. But in 1992, due to severe budget cuts, the Belfer's mission was, for all intents and purposes, stopped in 1992. So fast forward almost 20 years, 2011, an Andrew W. Mellon Foundation grant was awarded for the revitalization of Belfer, which resulted in them hiring Dr. Doctor to be the director and myself to be the the sound archivist to work along with the very talented Bob Hodge in the audio as our audio engineer. So a little bit about our collections. We're administratively part of the Special Collections Research Center. So that means that in addition to our commercial items, we also hold a lot of non-commercial items. Those are the named collections that you would find, you know, EAD descriptions for from the Special Collections page. And roughly, these are our numbers, but we're still growing. So you can see roughly about 800,000 items. So we're not small, and it's a daunting sort of task, and we're only 3 years in. So what I want to talk about is our current accessibility and where we want to go in this age of media being used in classrooms more and more, and teaching and pedagogy being based more on multimedia. So currently, what we have is we provide listening copies. You can go to our website and request a listening copy. You have to come to our reading room in Syracuse, and judging on how much it cost me to get here, it's not cheap to get to Syracuse, so we need to try to figure that out. We do have the Belfer Cylinders digital connection that was a project that started in the late 90s and continued. Basically, what we've done is we've taken Edison cylinders, so Edison Blue Ambrols, Edison Wax, Edison Records, Edison Standards, and then we put them up in a content DM platform so that you're available to progressively download or stream those items in MP3 or WAV format. And I wanted to show you that. So here is the web page. It has a very, very simple search function. You can also browse by subject or genre, but I'm just going to say, please don't. These terms come from basically the item itself. So there's one. So the example I always use is Brazil. It's just the national anthem of Brazil played by the Edison Military Orchestra. So it's not actually Brazilian music. It's just the title of it is the national anthem of Brazil. So basically, you can use an advanced search, but you can also do searches on titles and everything. And so this is the one that I always use. It's just Loch Lomond, because we play it for our students. When they come to the Belfer, we play it on the Edison Triumph so that they can get a sense of what it would have sounded like in 1908 to hear a cylinder in your parlor. In addition to the Belfer Cylinders connection, we do have some streaming. We use Ensemble through Blackboard, our course management site, and we have an institutional repository for the product of SU Scholars. And if it's a lectured video or a videoed lecture, then that is available on Surface. Skip that. But basically what we're doing is we're digitizing all of this stuff because that's our right to do it, and we're in the business of preservation. But the only thing that we can get out is Edison cylinders. So there's this very real sort of sense that we are a brick wall towards access. So you have to either come to us or you're out of luck. And so what this means is, in an unmediated online access is limited to approximately 10% of just one audio collection at Belfer, at Syracuse University Libraries. And so to combat this, the stream team was composed, and we have members from, there's 13 members, they're members from the Copyright and Policy Office, IT, subject librarians, metadata librarians, Jenny and myself are on it. Here's a quick list of who is on there. So we cover the whole gamut. So, you know, we have higher-ups, we have people who work in classrooms, we have our additional digital initiatives librarian, et cetera, et cetera. And when we were put together, our charge was to develop a blueprint for delivering already digitized audio and audiovisual content to students, faculty, and researchers. And what we were asked to produce would be a policy document that would discuss why we were able to stream and why we can stream. So basically, looking at the numbers of the percentage of media growing in classrooms, the demand for audio, the demand for audiovisual from professors, and how we needed to be better, how we needed to serve better our patrons. And then an implementation blueprint. And what that was is, what requirements do we need to satisfy user needs, wants? What are the legal, what are the copyright demands that we have to meet? As well as the vision of the library administrators. They're the ones who are going to sign off on it. So if they want it to look a certain way, that's how it's going to look. And then what system should we use and why? Should we advocate for an enterprise system? That is a system over the entirety of Syracuse University that we would be a part of, that we could then scale so that we were all in it together. We could use our expertise to help other departments across campus to take care of their media, et cetera. An out-of-the-box solution, a homegrown one. This is the context of of why we were put together. So there was a desire to reduce the number of metadata systems and eliminate duplication of effort. So in Content DM, what was happening is that the cylinders would be digitized. We would write out the metadata for it, so the technical metadata and all of the descriptive metadata. That form would go to a catalog librarian who would then put that information into Voyager and then turn around and put that information into Content DM. So a lot of time was being put into the way in which these things were made discoverable. And so we're like, that just doesn't make much sense to have that much duplication of effort. Desire to increase access to all of our collections, not just those considered in the public domain, that is the Edison stuff. E-reserves for audio, Access and Resource Services decided they were going to end e-reserves for audio and at the end of academic year 2013. There was a growing interest in the digital libraries and scholarship program. We had several meetings. We had teams that were deciding what a program would look like, what a center would look like, what it is we were trying to do. And then we had collection agreements that specified at minimum campus access to digitized materials. One of these collections is the Ted Koppel papers. So we have the full run of Nightline and all of his shows. And one of the agreements is that we are going to be able to share that because that is what he wanted or wants. I don't want to kill Ted Koppel.
Don't do that.
And then the previous work of members of the library and other campus stakeholders in an enterprise-wide media asset management system was not met with the same enthusiasms by Central IT. I was in a meeting and we were describing what we wanted to do, and we had the video production unit, we had our on-campus television network, we had athletics, and a very nice man from Central IT said, I just don't see a need for it. So we left sort of crestfallen and decided, what are we going to do? So we went ahead and we decided we're still going to write the policy document. We delivered that to our copyright and intellectual policy officer in December of 2012 to add the specific legal arguments. So to cite chapter and verse of Supreme Court cases of Section 108, so that, you know, it was very clear that if anyone came to us with, you know, the question, we could just point to that and say, this is why. And then we compiled a list of functional requirements through research and discussion of technological requirements that we wanted, what file formats did we want to make available, mobile device playback security requirements, legal requirements, and researcher requirements. So basically, we spent a lot of time looking at things like Avid's Interplay, Hitachi Systems, Avalon, variations. If it was a delivery service, we looked at it and we tried to see how it would fit at Syracuse. And this is kind of what we came up with. It's a very long list of functional requirements. So it had to be able to deliver audio, obviously moving image and still images, and PDFs. We needed to be able to restrict it to at least username and password while still allowing for downloading of public domain. We really wanted to do transcoding on the fly. We wanted to have a bunch of different codecs that we could use that we would just feed in a master file, and then the user could pick what they wanted and it would just come to them. So because we're trying to reduce the burden of storage, and by burden I mean cost. We wanted to be able to link to it from Blackboard, use our library tools for discovery, support full text searching, legal requirements for ADA and screen readers, is the player going to be screen readable, a variety of transcoding formats, not just MP3, be able to produce high resolution files at the same time, multiple objects per bibliographic record, so that is if you were to click on a title, we wanted you to be able to see the record label as well as listen to it. Because you don't always just want to listen to it. Sometimes you need to see what the label looked like. And researchers want to know what the label was. And the way that we take photos, we actually also highlight in matrix and take numbers. So we're trying to provide as much information as possible. Batch uploading of media and metadata without technician intervention. So basically, how can we streamline the ingest of our audio and audiovisual into this system to play? Interoperability with video productions and ingest systems, creation of playlists, multiple mobile device support, and multiple streams based on accessibility and connectivity. In other words, we were asking for the moon, but we knew that. So that was the point. We were told to think big. And when you tell librarians and IT people to think big, we ask for the moon. So we went through all of our research and decision making, and what we found out was that out of the box, there wasn't a lot that fit our requirements. Now, we had a lot of vendor demonstrations where we said, this is our requirement. They said, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, we can do that. And then when you ask them to prove it, they're like, well, no, we need to program that. So after you sign on the dotted line, we'll figure it out. But so we didn't really have a lot that we could just say, we could plug and play. So we could go with a system that got us most of our requirements and either figure out how to live with ourselves for sacrificing some of our choices, or pay to have the additional functions programmed or program them ourselves. So if you went with a proprietary system, you'd have to pay them to do the programming. If you went with open source, you'd have to dedicate FTE time to do that. Or build the whole thing ourselves and play around with open source tools as best we can. So we went with the latter. Our proposed solution was after months of webinars, discussions, presentations, and sales pitches, we decided that we were going to look internally at two projects that were being developed at Syracuse University for the description, search, and display of still images. And these are the Marcel Breuer Archive at Syracuse University and the Plastics Archive. And so let me show you that. So this is the Marcel Breuer Archive. The great thing about this archive is that it was the first sort of implementation of our METS and XTF system. And so basically what you have is you have all of these different faceted searches that you can do. Things are put together by projects with multiple items per project. You can search by dates. You can search by any number of things. It was a it was an excellent example of collaboration between the architecture department and Special Collections to say, what is it you need? What is it that we should think about that we haven't thought about? And then the plastics exhibit, which is just kind of quirky and cool in and of itself. So basically, we decided, let's just scale up what we had. We'd already put in enough time. A programmer had already put in enough time to sort of build this METS database application for still images, for image data and image metadata. So we're like, well, let's just ask, how long would it take? So basically, what I was saying is the existing project design was a METS database application that had an archivist interface for data entry. Data went in, and then we were able to control the metadata and put everything into digital objects and have complex objects with descriptions that were contingent on themselves, on other descriptions as well. Basically, this giant linked data sort of thing about objects. And then we had an image server for delivery, and this was the big thing that we would need to replace. And then using the extensible text framework from the California Digital Libraries. So what that would allow us to do is to have very detailed faceted indexes, and it would also be able to make us have this really cool sort of display. So people come to the Marcel Breuer Archive because it looks cool. You know, there's this, if it just looks like the Belfer Digital Cylinders connection, they're like, no. But if it looks nice, people will use it. And schematically, this is the way that it goes. So you have the METS database application, and you have the archivist who puts in the information. That information is then exported in an XML document, which is fed into XTF, which indexes it based on what your search parameters are going to be, and then presents it to the patron to search. And so we needed to modify the still image. We needed to modify this part, or at least augment it, because we were going to be providing still images of labels in addition to moving time-based media, essentially. So we knew we needed a player, and before I showed you that we were using Ensemble with Blackboard, we were using Ensemble and Surface, but there was a fundamental problem from our point of view with Ensemble at that time, and that it wouldn't allow us to employ different levels of security. And it was actually what the head of our IT department said, it was security through obfuscation. So you just had a very, very long URL. And so it was difficult to sort of point to that, right? But if you knew what it was, you could access it from anywhere to download that object. And it was also very clunky to use with Blackboard. It didn't, when you were putting information in, it would sometimes take a week to build a website within Blackboard for a class with 20 recordings that they were going to use. And we knew we needed a heck of a lot of additional fields. So we started compiling our wish list for descriptive, technical, provenance specifications to be added to the METS database application. And we knew we needed a lot of sandbox time. So if we weren't going to be using Ensemble, something that had been employed at Syracuse University, we decided, well, what other players can we look at? How can we plug those in? What is the functionality there? How long would it take? At one point, the web analyst actually had a proof of concept for transcoding on the fly, just a 2-minute cylinder. But we thought we were going really, really well because we had time and support. And so the first part of the document was delivered in December of 2012. And then we had the support of IT to allow our programmer just to spend his days sandbox developing this system. And then the AUL for Research and Scholarly Communication goes on research leave. So the copyright policy officer became the interim AUL for Scholarly Research and Communications. You can see where I'm going with this. And then June 2013, the dean and university librarian, Suzanne Thorin, stepped down. And the AUL for research, and the interim AUL for Research and Scholarly Communication became the interim dean. So basically, the copyright guy now runs the library. And if he's running the library, he's not working on my policy document. Well, so even though the timeline for the completion of the policy document was pushed back until TBD, we still had time to play around with it and test possible solutions against our requirements wish list, right? and then. January 2014, our primary programmer and Mets developer resigns, halting development on the Mets database application indefinitely. We have a Mets steering committee, and we have just recently gotten two new programmers. But whether or not their time will be as freely available to us as the previous analyst is still being worked out. We do have a copyright policy officer that also joined us in the fall of 2013, and she'll be delivering the policy document, I hope, by Christmas, but that's 2 years beyond of where we thought we were going to be. And then in March 2014, we were asked to provide more specific information about our implementation plan, including costing out the solutions and FTE. More specifically, in 2012, I was not told I would have to put together a budget. And then then in March 2014, someone came to me, I won't say who, but they're on the committee, and they run special collections. See, I didn't say his name or her name. Anyway, so he comes to me and he says, how much would it cost? Let's budget it out. Let's scale it up. Let's see what it's going to do. And so I didn't really know what it was that he wanted me for. So we had this very long discussion about whether we were going to be doing anything. And so here's where we were in December of 2012. And then that's where we were in March of 2014. Shifting sands and moving goalposts. I put a question mark there, though, because of the lessons that I learned from these delays and the lessons that I learned from going through this entire process. That is, don't get discouraged. We had the goalposts moved somewhat significantly, but we decided to embrace the new challenges and make a couple of very critical choices. The Mets XTF system would still be the long-term goal because that's what the library administrators wanted. They wanted that. So we said, okay, here is our final goal. This is the quote-unquote permanent solution that we will then work with once we get it up and running. We just realized it had to take us a bit longer. And so we asked ourselves, can we leverage what we currently use plus a few smaller investments to start streaming more of our media? And so we researched ways that we can do it. We came up with a lot of interesting ways that we can do it and asked questions about departmental support and funding moving forward with various aspects of what this interim solution might be. And you don't always get the answer you want, and I still haven't gotten an answer that I want, but at least you know where you need to, you know where you are and you know what you need to advocate for afterward or how hard you need to advocate. So if it comes down to me sitting down, drawing out a schematic of how I think it's going to work and then making a plea, essentially, for it, that I'm at least learning something about how to do this, and I'm providing them what they need. They need the reason to say, okay, we want to be at Z, but right now M is where we are, and we're not always going to... Interim solutions should always be interim, and so I have to keep saying, just because we're doing it this way now doesn't mean we're not going to do it the way you want to in the future. That's the hope, anyway. We never want interim solutions to become the end goal. And make the most out of your delays. So as we were sitting there going, what are we going to do now? We can just sit in a room and talk about what we want to do, or we can sort of go back over our work, see where we are, see what we can do moving forward. And so we originally had rejected the current ensemble version used on campus because of its clunkiness and because of its lack of security restrictions. But then we found out the head of IT asked me if he could talk to Ensemble again, see what they were doing. They were going to prepare a new summer release that's coming out this summer. And so we went to talk to them, and they had addressed many of the concerns that we needed minimally to use Ensemble as the player. So we've gotten, you can set groups of files to be downloadable while others are streaming only. You can do that on ingest. It's very easy. Just a radio button that you click. You can set different levels of access, and this is the great part. You can do it from groups on Active Directory. You can do it to IP, so if you have a restriction that says this one computer in this one room, you can do it that way, or you can do domain name. You can do username and password. So if you're a student and you don't live on campus, you can use that. If we want to get into the real heady days of things, we can say, well, we have a virtual reading room, and we can give out time-based credentials so that a researcher who doesn't live in Syracuse or isn't a student or isn't affiliated can sign in for a specific amount of time to stream what they want to do for their research. And transcoding on the fly still isn't available, but they were expanding file formats from which to choose, so we weren't just providing basic streams. We were able to provide more high-quality streams. MP4 is an example. Also, some lossless compressions, and they're still working on it. So we go back and we say, well, how about this one? And so they seem very keen to work with us to provide what it is we need. And we're not the only people who use Ensemble, so the more people who are asking them based on requirements for higher ed, the more traction we're going to get. I learned this term. It's called stakeholder advocacy. I'd never heard that before, but we had a big divestment argument on campus, and so I use it now. The perfect is the enemy of the good. Be flexible, even in the face of inflexibility. That's the most important thing I can say. So can multiple backends peacefully coexist? Does the work involved in creating one super database cloud the issue? Is the desire to have the perfect database system take away from what your goal is, which is sharing your stuff? Does it put us behind? Can we accomplish what we need with what we have? And the answer I got was maybe, and my answer is yes, so I'm going to keep pushing until I get that yes answer through. But basically, through this process, we've been able to convince others that it's not such a crazy proposition to consider. The modularity of what it is we're trying to talk about, just exporting data into an XML format that is indexable by XTF, doesn't mean we have to come from that database. We can do that. And is the new release of Ensemble going to work? Preliminarily, yes. It's not perfect, but it ticks off enough of the boxes that we could employ it. And because they're local, we can talk to them more about their development and their development timelines and where they're going. And sometimes I said you don't get the answer you want, but you use it to push forward. And so the upshot is expanded streaming is coming to Syracuse University libraries. There is no official timeline. There is only moving targets and moving goalposts. But it is coming, and this is in no small part to the hard work of the members of my team. They're a joy to work with. And we've highlighted ways in which we can leverage existing infrastructures out of necessity and shown that there's a reason to move forward with interim solutions as long as they remain interim solutions. And we've provided decision makers with more information so that they can better advocate for changes and additions to existing infrastructure or to reporting lines or FTEs or balance of time divisions for work. Thank you for your time.
I think we have time for one or two short questions for Patrick before we move to the next presenter. If you would raise your hand, I'll bring you a microphone. It's a shy crowd. No questions at this time? You know where to find Patrick? Thank you.
You know what?
Yes, just jettison. I don't have audio now.
There's no audio.
We're working with audio.
Yeah, that's the problem.
You want to put the mess file through a sound player? Let's see what it does.
I can project. I've done it accidentally.